You don't get the extras. The sheer extras are only here. All right, everyone, good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Yud Ches. Today's daf is Yud Ches, and we're starting on Yud Ches Mishnah. A lot of ground to cover today. So says the Mishnah. Moser lo zikunim. We're back now. Remember, first Mishnah in the Perek began by speaking about the sequestration preparation for the 7 days prior to Yom Kippur. Now the Gemara is picking up on that theme and continuing. So what happened? Masrulos, remember in the previous Mishnah, we also spoke about the idea that he was sprinkled, right? He was sprinkled with the apron of the Paraduma all 7 days. So Masrulos, Akinim, Iziknei, Bezdin. They gave to the Kohen Gadol a group of elders from the elders of the Bezdin. The Kohen Lefana Beseda Hayom. So we'll say the next step was preparing him for the Avodah. So the Zikanim, these elders would go ahead and prepare him. They would literally review with him the Seder Hayom, the sacrificial service of the day. But Omron, they would say to him, Ishe Kohen Gadol, Sir Kohen Gadol, Kara Ata Beficha Shema Shachachto Shema Lo Lamarta. And they would tell the Kohen Gadol, you read it yourself, right? You go ahead, read Parshas Acharei Mos all 7 days, Chazrit over why? Because maybe you forgot it, or maybe you never learned it. They wanted the Kohen Gadol to become familiar with, again, the Avodah, but they didn't just want to engage in frontal learning, in lecture format. They wanted the Kohen Gadol, you read it yourself so you can chazer it. Erev Yom Kippur M'Shachas, on Erev Yom Kippur in the morning, Ma'amidin Oso B'Shar Mizrach. So we'll say the morning of Erev Yom Kippur, they would place him in the eastern gate, U'ma'avirin Lefanav Parim Ve'elim Ukvasim. And they would bring before him, they would pass before him oxen, rams, and sheep, because of also, remember, part of the Yom Kippur service is a very complex service, as we'll get into. But again, they wanted him to be familiar with all of the animals, and they also wanted him to be familiar with the processes for each animal. All 7 days. So also, for all the 7 days of sequestration preparation, whatever the Kohen Gadol wanted to eat, they would go ahead and they would give him. So also, just so you see, it's interesting. I think it's an interesting din in learning also, because what they did is all 7 days they went over with him the parsha of Acharei Mos. See, he knew the Avodah clear, but you know, for someone to really learn something, experiential learning is very important. Also, it's very important. These are concepts that are only become. Chazal knew this. Interesting enough, long ago. Educational methodology is only catching up with this today, a recognition that you can't just sit kids down and tell them stuff and expect them to know it. Some children learn that way, but very often children are kinesthetic or experiential learners. So what's amazing over here is you have the Kohen Gadol. He learned the Avodah for the last 6 days. But what? Come out of Yom Kippur? Field trip. I mean, it's not a far field trip. It's only down the steps, as we'll see. But all right, low budget field trip. But now again, what we're going to do is we're going to have every single animal pass before him. And we want to say, oh, what's that? What do you do with it? And that way he brings it alive. Fine. So what happens? All 7 days, he can eat whatever he wants. Come Erev Yom Kippur, they would limit his consumption. Why? Because excessive eating brings about drowsiness. As we will see, the Ma'aseh said they did not let the Kohen Gadol sleep the night of Yom Kippur. And the reason for that was that there was a concern that if he fell asleep, he'd have a seminal emission. If he had a seminal emission, that would preclude him from doing the Avodah on Yom Kippur. So they kept them awake the whole night. We'll discuss how. So the Gemara says that therefore comes Erev Yom Kippur, they would limit his food intake in order that he should not become drowsy from being full. So the Gemara says, listen to this. So the Gemara says that for all 7 days we reviewed with the Kohen Gadol the whole Seder Parshas Acharei Mos. Why? Because maybe he doesn't remember the Avodah, or maybe he never learned it. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. To tell me that he didn't go ahead and to tell me that he forgot it is one thing, but to tell me that he never learned it, is it possible that you'd go ahead and make such an individual the Kohen Gadol? So the Gemara says, V'hatanya, but we learn, V'hakohen ha-Gadol me'echav. The Torah says, the Kohen who is greater than, literally, the Hakohen ha-Gadol me'echav is the Kohen who is greater from among his brethren. What does that tell us? It's talking about the Kohen Gadol. Shehe Gadol me'echav, the Kohen Gadol must be greater than his fellow Kohanim. Bekoach, benoi, bechachma, ba'osher. He has to be greater than his fellow Kohanim with strength. With noi literally means beauty. The Kohen Gadol has to be handsome. Chachma, he has to be wise. But Osher has to be wealthy. Both say this is amazing. Kohen Gadol can't be a schnook, as they say in Latin. Right? Meaning the Kohen Gadol has to be handsome. The Kohen Gadol has to be wise. The Kohen Gadol has to be wealthy. He has to have ala milus, as they say. Why? Because the Kohen Gadol has to be a respected figure. And he has to be universally respected. Some people respect beauty. Some people respect wealth. Some people respect wisdom. Some people respect power. He's got to have it all. Not only that, Achirim, listen to this, Achirim say, Minayim Shim Einlo, Shech Avakana Megadlenov. So we'll say, not only that, now it's very important for him to be wealthy. So let's say you find the right Kohen Gadol, but he's not wealthy. He's not wealthy. So what he's got ala milus besides wealth. So what do? Listen to this. She'echav kohanim megadnoso. His fellow kohanim contribute. His fellow kohanim contribute and make him wealthy. Everybody pulls their resources and makes the Kohen Gadol wealthy. Tam lomar, where do we know that from? Va kohen hagadol me'echav. Because the Gemara makes a drasha. What is it called? It says the Kohen who's Gadol, Me'echav. Me'echav means what? Rabosai? From his brothers, which indicates that even if he's not independently wealthy, his brothers have to contribute their wealth to him to make him wealthy. Gadleu Mishal Echav. Literally make him, raise him up from what his brothers have. Amar Rabosai. So the Avi's Kasha is, so how could the Mishnah say that we're dealing with a person who never learned the Amo? What is this? Is the Kohen Gadol Amo Aretz? He doesn't know anything. How can you have such a thing? So the Gemara says, yes. Amrav Yosef Lokasha, Kan b'Mikdash Rishon, Kan b'Mikdash Sheni. So one is talking about the first temple, one is talking about the second temple. Rabosai, in the first temple era, Rashi says, b'Mikdash Rishon, lo ha'emidu ela al pi ha'Torah kohanim me'uganim. In the first temple era, they only went ahead and what? So we actually had this in the beginning of the Masechta, when the Gemara contrasted the number of Kohanim Gedolim, which was relatively small, in the first temple era, versus the number of Kohanim Gedolim, over 300 Kohanim Gedolim in the second temple era. 369 Kohanim Gadol in the second temple era versus less than 20 in the first. So the Gemara says, therefore, first temple era, they appointed appropriate Kohanim Gadolim. Second temple era, Rashi says, actually no Rashi yet, excuse me, Kama Mikdasheni, Da'am Rabasi, Tarkava Didinori, Aila Le Marta Bas Baitos, Lianai Malka. So we'll say, because the Gemara tells a story, that Marta Bas Baitos was Dura Baitos. Now, Baitos himself was a very interesting person. Baitos was the disciple of Antigonus. Baitos went off the derech, actually, in part because of a teaching of his Rebbe. Antigonus is the one who said, Atyuka vodim hamishamshin asarav amanas lakava pras. Do not be like servants who worship the master for the sake of receiving reward. Rather, worship the master for the sake of not receiving reward. Baitos misunderstood this statement and thought that what his Rebbe was saying was, there's no reward. Baitos went off the derech and actually got a nice following of Zal, known as Baitusim, right? Who ultimately rejected the Torah Shebal Peredek, reject the oral law. So apparently Baitos had a daughter, Marta. Marta was very wealthy. She was a widow. And what happens? She becomes betrothed to a guy. Actually, he was a good guy, Yoshua ben Gamla. He was a righteous man. So Marta bas Baitos paid an incredible amount of money, literally a half a saw of gold pieces, to King Yanai. Now Tosfos points out, this is not the Yanai who killed out the Chachamim. There was a very evil Yanai who killed out the Chachamim, actually became the Kohen Gadol himself. This is not that Yanai. It's a different Yanai. So she paid an exorbitant amount of money to Yanai to allow her chassan. I guess this was instead of a watch or instead of a shas. So she bought him the position of Kohen Gadol. I will say, Yoshua ben Gamla, again, was actually a very good man. He was a very righteous individual. So the Gemara says, So the point that the Gemara is pointing out is that you see already second temple era, Kohen Gadol is a bought position. So because it's a bought position, when the Chachamim are preparing the Kohen Gadol for the Yom Kippur service, they have to say what? They have to say literally, maybe you never learned this, because it's quite possible that he would have been an Amma Ares, in which case they'd have to be educating him for the first time. Erev Yom Kippur M'Shachris. Remember, the Mishnah said that come Shachris of Yom Kippur morning, they would take him out to the eastern gate, and they would pass before him. They would pass before him all of the animals, so that he could review the sacrificial service. So the Gemara says, Tana, Afas Seirim. So we'll say, the Brisa says, there's one interesting thing. What does it mention in the Mishnah? It mentions oxen, rams, and sheep. What doesn't it mention? It doesn't mention goats. Now, I will say what's interesting is the following. There's a very important seirim, very important goat offering. That's the two goats, right? The one that's the seir la Hashem and the one that's the seir la Azazel. Why doesn't it mention it there? So the Gemara says, V'tana didan mai taima lo tana seirim. Why doesn't our Mishnah include goats? Kevan da'achet ka'asu chol shadayte. I will say, listen to this. Because the Gemara says, because why did the seirim come? The Se'irim are pure sin offerings, right? Remember, the Se'ir La'azazel is for the sins of the Jewish people. Actually, they're both for the sins of the Jewish people. Just one is thrown off the cliff, one is offered on the Mizbeach. So if the Kohen Gadol sees the sin offering, Chol Shadayte. Chol Shadayte, Ravosei, means literally he's going to become very despondent. He's going to realize, my gosh, the Jewish people have sins, are going to be atoned for, and it could ultimately shake his confidence. So we don't do it. So Gemara says, one second. Ihachi par nami alchit hu da'asi. I will say, but the par, the oxen, are also brought as a sin offering. Oh, it's different. Kevan da'alav alecha v'kohanim hu da'asi. So I'll say, because who is the par brought for? The par is brought for the Kohanim. That's a sin offering for the Kohen Gadol and for his fellow Kohanim. Oh, so now that's a sin offering for this fellow, for himself and his fellow Kohanim. Iika inish the is be milsa meida hava yadile the Kohen Gadol meida yadile umahadile b'tshuva. Oh, when it comes to the Kohen Gadol and his fellow brethren, the Kohanim are a tight knit group. If somebody's out of line, if somebody's not doing something right, it's going to come to the Kohen Gadol's attention. And the Kohen Gadol is going to make sure that he does tshuva. So meaning when it comes to the actual Kohanic group, the Kohen Gadol has a tight handle over his fellow Kohanim. If there's a problem, it's going to get fixed. Bekulu Yisrael. Lo yada. But I will say, obviously, if there are problems in the greater Jewish people, which of course inevitably there are, the Kohen Gadol is not necessarily going to be knowledgeable about that. And therefore, again, the Gemara says, the par offering, which Kohen Gadol is not blind to the fact that there's sin that needs to be atoned for, but the Chalisha Sadas, apparently the despondency, comes from the knowledge that there are things that are broken out there that he doesn't even know about. And if he doesn't even know about, he can't even fix it. If I know something's broken, I can fix it, I'm not going to get despondent on that. But to see the two goats that are going to be offered up for sin that I'm not even aware of, who knows what's out there? And because I don't know, I can't fix it, that causes him to be despondent. Amravina, Hayuda Amrinchi, this is what Ravina said. This is the adage that people say. If your nephew is a police officer, don't pass before him in the marketplace. I will say, what is that? It doesn't really roll off the tongue well. But what's the meaning over here? The meaning of a police officer means an officer of the king. If your nephew is an officer of the king, make sure don't let him see you in the marketplace. Why? Because he knows your finances, because your family. And if he knows you have money, he may try to extract more money from you for the king. It's another way of saying family knows each other's business. So therefore, again, when it comes to the Kohen Gadol with his fellow Kohanim, if there's something wrong, he is going to tackle it. But that's only because it's his family. The other people, he may not be aware of. Okay. So we'll say, remember, what did the Gemara say? All 7 days, the Kohen Gadol could eat whatever he wants. So we'll say again, but come Erev Yom Kippur, what happened? They limited his intake. Why? Because Lemaisa, they didn't want him to be drowsy. Right? Being too full causes drowsiness. And they don't want him to sleep on the night of Yom Kippur. On Erev Yom Kippur, they would feed him flour and eggs. Lemas Masur Abosai literally means to loosen him. If you look at Rashi over here, Rashi says, Ma'achilin also. Erev Yom Kippur is the first wild line. Shachris, Lassos Abesim. Kedei Lemas Mes Achilu Shemev L'shal Shalo. Shalo Yitztarech Lemekav L'machras. They wanted to have a laxative effect. They want it to act laxative. Why? Because they want it to empty him out on Erev Yom Kippur. Because they will say the avoda on Yom Kippur is long and intricate, and they don't want him having to take care of his bodily needs. So we feed him foods on Erev Yom Kippur that will clean him out, so he won't have to relieve himself on Yom Kippur itself. So the Gemara says that can't be true because these are the types of food that literally, again, maybe lidechimum apparently means that they increase body temperature. So because they increase body temperature, there's a greater probability of seminal emission. Tanya, I will say it's interesting that Chazak clearly felt that certain foods have a greater ability to bring about a seminal emission. So apparently, flour and eggs were some of those things that were. Tanya, sumchos, amar mishum Rabbi Meir, in ma'achilin also lo abi, va'omrile lo abavi. So we'll see. These words stand for this. So Rabbi Meir said that you can't go ahead and feed him abi. Some say abavi. We'll see what that means. V'yesh omrim af lo yayin lavan. You can't give him white wine either. Lo abi. What does abi stand for? Lo esrog v'lo beitzim v'lo yayin yoshim. You can't eat. You can't give him to eat of an esrog, not eggs and not aged wine. V'omri lo ababi, what does ababi stand for? Lo esrog, not an esrog, lo beitzim, v'lo basar shamin. So no esrog, no eggs, no fatty meat, no aged wine. V'ish omrin, and some say, af lo yayin, lavan, bibnei shayayin, mevi esa adam lidei tumah. Because Rabbi say ultimately wine, or again, wine consumption, could cause a person to have a seminal emission. So the Gemara goes weiter. Tanu rabbanon. So we'll say, remember, this is all on Erev Yom Kippur. Because remember, if he has a seminal emission during the other 6 days, that doesn't concern us as much. Although, again, some of these opinions over here are saying it's actually this was the diet throughout. But remember, again, the our Mishnah began by saying that Lemaisa, this was only for Erev Yom Kippur where they limited his intake. These opinions now say perhaps even throughout the 6 days, right? The Rashi brings out also throughout the 6 days that we should not go ahead and give him these foods. But Lemaisa will see the real limitations were on Erev Yom Kippur itself. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, Zav, Tan Rabbanon, Zav, Tolin lo b'ma'achol. V'chol min ma'achol. So we'll say, the Gemara says that a Zav, and we'll say, a Zav is a person who has, this is a type of emission, not a seminal emission. Remember, a Zav is a person who becomes Tameh. Again, if he has three re'ios, if he has three emissions, he becomes a Zav Gadol, which ultimately means he has to observe 7 clean days, Shivanikiyim. So look at Rashi. Rashi says, Zav tolin lo b'ma'achol. So for a Zav, we make his emissions dependent on what he ate. Now look at Rashi. Im achal ma'achal harbe. If a person ate a lot, mikol min shehu chulin, from any type of food, lomar shemachmas rov ma'achal ra'a, ve'eno zov l'tumas shivas yamim u'l'karban, v'chsiv bisaro, v'lomachmas anso. So we'll say, Gemara, something very interesting. If a person has a zov-like emission, the first thing we ask is, did he eat a lot? Did he eat a lot? Because apparently, again, eating a lot could bring about a type of this type of emission. So if he ate a lot, we hinge that emission on the additional consumption, and therefore we won't treat it like a zav emission. Why? Because both sides, Rashi points out over here, in order for it to be a zav emission, a zav must not come from any external circumstance. If a zav emission is brought up by some type of external circumstance, like too much food, then Lamai said that's not considered zivos. That's what Rashi says. If you look at the Rashi, he says, Dichsiv bisaro v'lo machmas onso. It has to be zav mibsaro. It has to be an emission from his flesh, and not because of any other extenuating circumstance. On the other hand, ava bal keri, tummy ba'ones, de'in kari v'zav bisaro. So we'll say, so therefore, when it comes to a zav, the first thing we look at is, is there any other external circumstance that we can hinge this emission on? So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, "Zav tol malachah b'chol minei machal." Elazar ben Chasor Mishum Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, "Ein ma'achilin oso." This is now a zav. We don't give the zav to eat. Lo chagvi, v'lo gabim, v'lo kol dvarim hamaviim lidei tuma. So we'll say we don't go ahead and give a zav to eat chagvi and gabam. Again, these stand for things. Rashi says, "In ma'achilin oso b'mei bedikaso." So on days, this is talking about the shiva nikiyim. I will say, here's something interesting about zav. So when it comes to zivos, in order for a person to become a zav, he has to have an emission that is not brought on by any type of external circumstance. So let's say now he had three emissions that were brought about by non-external circumstances, just regular mibsaro. Now he has to observe 7 clean days. Now 7 clean days have to be clean, free of any emission. Let's say he has an emission during those days. So the Maisa, it destroys, it stops the 7 clean days, and he has to start again. Now, what's interesting is the following. Any emission goes ahead and could ruin those 7 days. And therefore, the Gemara says, we're going to be careful what we feed the Zav during his Shiv Nikiyim in order not to bring about an emission. So what won't we give him? We won't give him Gabam, Lo Chagbi. What does this stand for? So the Gemara says, Lo Chagbi, Lo Chalav, Velo Gvina, Velo Beitzim, Velo Yayin. Not milk, cheese, eggs, or wine. Below gabam, what is gabam? May grease in shelpool, juice, the liquid of pounded beans, ubasar shamein, and fatty meat, umurias, and fish fat, velo kol devarim hamevin lidei tuma, and not anything else that could bring him lidei tuma to tuma, which means to have an emission. La asuye mai, what does this come to include? La asuye hadetan rabban, it comes to include these five things. Chamisha devarim hamevin esa adil lidei tuma. There are five things, Rabbi Osai, that bring a person to a state of tuma. Ve'eluhein, and these are they. Hashchalayim, shchalayim, Rabbi Osai, is cress. These are all different types of plants. Cress. I'm sorry. Ve'eluhein hashum. Thank you. Garlic. Hashchalayim. Cress. Chalag loges. Chalag loges is purslane. 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 Again, type of spice. Beitzim, eggs. Vagargir. Gargir, Rabbi Osai, is a rocket plant. Again, these are all different types of herbs that grow that apparently, again, could ultimately increase the chance of seminal emission. So the Gemara says, the Gemara actually here quotes a pasuk from Melachim Beis, and the Navi says, "Vayetze echad el hasada lilaket oros." Someone went out to the field to go ahead and collect oros. Now, what are oros? So the Gemara says, "Tana mishmeid Rabbi Meir zegargir." What are oros? Rabbi Osai, what does this mean? This refers to the rocket plant. So apparently, Amar Rabbi Yochanan lama nikra shman oros. Why is the gargir, why is the rocket plant called oros? Shemeiros es ha'inayim. Because apparently the rocket plant is good for eyesight. It's good for eyesight. It helps with eyesight. That's why it's called oros. That's why it's called the plant of light. Amar Rav Huna says, Hamotzi gargir, if a person finds rocket plant, im yachol la'ochlo, if a person could go ahead and eat it, ochlo, then he could eat it. He should eat it. Ve'im lav, but if he can't eat it, ma'aviro agabe inav, then he should go ahead and literally rub it on his eyes. Apparently, it's beneficial for eyesight. So the Gemara says, Vayter. Amar Papa, begargira mitzarana. But it's not just any rocket plant. It's only rocket plant that grows on the mitzarana. Mitzarana, Rabbi Osai, means literally on the border, which means, okay, Rashi. Mitzarana, Rashi says, it's the top line of Rashi. Hagodol ala mitzar, that grows on the border between two fields. She'in sevivosav zera achar shiachish kochor. Rabbi Osai, apparently, the way it works with vegetation is that when a plant grows isolated from other plants, the mice, it gets all of the nutrients of the soil itself, as opposed to when it grows in close proximity to other plants, it has to share those nutrients. So apparently the Gemara is saying over here that this gargir, this rocket plant, is really only beneficial for eyesight when it grows independent of other plants and it soaks up the full nutrients of the soil. But the mice, if it grows with other plants, then apparently it's not as potent. Okay, so the Gemara says the following. Amar Rav Papa Bar Gina, excuse me, I'm reading that. Amar Rav Gidol, Amar Rav. Now we're transitioning for just a moment. So now essentially what we've done over here is we've spoken about the Kohen Gadol and the Zav. And the common denominator of these discussions is that there are certain foods that apparently bring about seminal emissions. Remember the progression here. This all begins in the Mishnah by saying that Lamaisa, we don't let the Kohen Gadol eat too much on Erev Yom Kippur because you don't want him to fall asleep and have a seminal emission. That then opens up the discussion for the general diet of the Kohen Gadol, what he should or what he shouldn't eat, because certain foods do bring about seminal emission. So we try to limit his consumption of seminal emission producing foods. Once we spoke about that, the Gemara then goes into the discussion about Zav. Zav, so same thing by Zav. Again, if he has a Re'iyah, we look at, did he eat too much? Did that bring in the Re'iyah? During Shiva Nikiyim, we stay away from foods that could bring about an emission. So now the Gemara brought all of this, the Gemara then transitions a little bit and says an interesting halacha. Amar Rav Gidol, Amar Rav, ach sinoi lo yocha beitzim. I will say, if you are a guest in someone's house, you should not eat eggs. You should not eat eggs. Why not? Rashi says, Shemevin lidei keri. Because it can bring about a seminal emission, and it will ultimately make you look in a compromised standing in the eyes of the other members of the house. And you should not sleep literally on the garment of the balabais. So we'll say, what are we referring to over here? Referring to if you're in someone else's home, so a person has to be careful not to have a seminal emission. Because if a person has a seminal emission, then ultimately, again, they could stain, ultimately, their balabases, if the garment or the sheets or something else, and that will bring down the standing of the guest in the eyes of the Balabais. We'll say this also, the Gemara actually brings down this halacha in terms of having relations with one's wife when in someone else's home, that a person has to be careful that if one does engage in relations in someone else's home, that one does not leave any type of stains as a result of the relations. Because again, these are things that ultimately, if the Balabais discovers afterwards, could ultimately bring down, it causes the Balabas to look at the guest in a different way. Rav, we'll say, listen to this. Now we're going to get to a very dramatic Gemara. I hope we have time today to do it justice. That's why I went a little bit faster on the first part, because this is some wild Gemara. Rav, ki mikla lidarshish. Rav, when he went to the city, Darshish, we'll say, is a city. When he went to the city of Darshish, Machris, he would make the following announcement. Man havya liyoma. Who would like to be my wife for the day? And I'll say, now what does that mean? Look at Rashi over here. Mikla ledarshish, shem haya, or sham haya ragilelech. He used to go there regularly. Man havya liyoma. Yesh isha shetinasi liyoma. Is there someone willing to marry me today? Shes akev kan, v'teitzila achar mikan. So I'll say, remember, yoma, day doesn't just have to mean a day. Day means that he was in Darshish for a temporary amount of time. And he said, does anybody want to marry me for the amount of time that I'm here? Similarly, Rav Nachman, kad mikla lishchintziv, when Rav Nachman would go to the city of Shchintziv, Machris, he would announce, man hav liyoma, who wants to go ahead and marry me for the day? For the day. So we'll say again, for a short-term marriage. So what's going on up here? So Gemara says, v'atanya, let's analyze this for just a moment. That, or for more than a moment. V'atanya, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, lo yisa ot, now we'll say, remember, both Rav and Rav Nachman were married. So now they're going to these places, and they're essentially asking, does anyone else want to marry me here? So the Gemara says, one second. First of all, there's a halachic issue. V'atanya, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, lo yisa adam isha b'medina zu, v'yelech v'yisa isha medina acheres. We'll say, so here you have Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov saying, a man should not marry a woman overseas. He shouldn't marry a woman here and marry a woman overseas. Why? Shema yizdav guzel etzelzeh. Benimsa ach no se achoso, va'av no se bito, umemale kola olam kulom amzerus. I will say, what's the concern? If I have families in different parts of the globe, then what's going to happen? My families may not know each other. If I want to stay alive, my families better not to get to know each other, right? So what happens? So my families might not know each other. What's going to happen? I'm raising children here. I'm raising children there. And what could happen? It could be that my shidduch age, and what's going to know? Wonderful shidduch, right? What's going to happen? So I have children over here, children over there, and they may marry each other, and the world will be filled with mamzerim. Because again, remember, the families don't necessarily know each other, and therefore the maisa could create a major problem. Va'alzeh ne'emar, and about this it is said, Umala ha'aretz zima. The world will be filled with zinus. So we'll say, the Gemara says, just even before we understand what exactly Rav and Rav Nachman are trying to accomplish, there seems to be a halachic problem with all of this. Because Gemara will say, the halachic problem is not polygamy, because polygamy is fine from the Gemara's vantage point. What the problem over here is creating families in different parts of the world that can will not necessarily know each other and could ultimately lead to marrying one another and create situations of mamzerus. Omri, so that's not a problem for us. Why? Because the Gemara says, Omri, Rabbanon kala islahu. Because I will say, because these were Rabbanim, therefore what Rashi says, Ushmam karui al b'nehem. Therefore, again, their offspring will be known. Because their offspring will be known, Lemaisa, there's no fear that they may come to go ahead and marry each other, because they'll all know that they're the children of Rab, they're the children of Rav Nachman. So the Gemara says, well, there's another kasha. Vamarava, but Rava says the following. Rava says, Tavua lihinase v'nispaisa, tzricha leishev shivin kim. I will say, there's an interesting concept in Hilchos Nida called Dam Chimud. Dam Chimud means that Chazal, so the Gemara Chimisechus Nida discusses this, that if a man asks a woman to marry him, and she agrees to the proposal, there's a concern that as a result of the excitement over marriage, she may actually emit some uterine blood. What's called dam chimut. And we'll say it's interesting. We'll save for the deeper discussion for Nida. Dam chida. Therefore, halacha lemaisa. That's why, for example, in halacha, if a man wants to go ahead and marry a woman, so again, he can't propose today and get married tomorrow. There's a concept of dam chimut. So she has to wait shivinikim. She has to wait 7 clean days before going ahead and marrying. So between proposal and marriage, there has to be at least 7 clean days. So the Gemara says, again, another halachic problem. So Rav rolls in to Darshish and Rav Nachman into Shchinsiv, and they go out and they say, okay, he wants to get married, and let's assume there are takers for this proposal. The Gemara says a halachic problem, that again, when a man proposes to a woman and she accepts, there's dam chimut, and she needs 7 days. How could they marry them? So the Gemara says, Shivnikim, Rabbanon, Udoye Udoye Havu Modelahu Maktim Havu Makadmi U Mishadri Shalucha. So the Gemara says, oh, because what did they do? Rav and Rav Nachman would go ahead and dispatch messengers ahead of time that they were coming, and what would happen? And they would go ahead and float this proposal ahead of time so that the women ultimately had time. Meaning, it's about the time Rav and Rav Nachman came to town, those 7 days would have already elapsed. But the other possibility is, the other possibility is, and this is where the Gemara says, like, really, what is going on over here? The Gemara says, you have to understand what was happening over here. That in reality, they had no intentions of living with these women. No intention. What did they do? They means they set, these women were set aside. Rashi says, Yehudei ba'alma. Rashi says, Ve'in niskakim lahem. There was never really an intent to live with these women, to consummate this marriage. Now we'll say, what were Rav and Rav Nachman concerned about? What were they concerned about? They were concerned that a man is away from his wife, right? Rav will say, it's maisim b'chol yom. When sometimes things happen, people are away from their wives, and people get into all kinds of trouble. So what happens? Rav and Rav Nachman wanted to create a sense of marital stability for themselves. So what happens? So they went ahead and they essentially created a halachic marriage. They created a halachic marriage with these women. But again, there was no intimacy. There was no conjugal relationship. I said, how does that help? Right? How does that help? So the Gemara says, listen to this. Because Rav said, you can't compare someone who has bread in his basket to someone who does not have bread in his basket. So the idea that technically speaking, should I desire relations, I have access to those relations, that by itself calms down the Yetzer Hara. I will say, just so you know, this is the whole concept, why a husband is permitted to have yichud with his wife who's a nida, right? A woman who's a nida is an erva. She's an erva. You're not allowed to have yichud with an erva. Not allowed to. So why am I allowed to be alone with my wife if she's in nida? Why is that permitted? To which the Gemara answers, because since a wife is going to be permitted to her husband, therefore we assume the Yetzer Hara is not as strong. Because he knows that after X number of days, she's going to go to the mikvah, and this same woman is going to be permitted to me, the Yetzer. So therefore, again, Rav and Rav Nachman, in order that the Yetzer Hara should not grow too great when they were away for their wives, set up essentially this marriage of convenience. So the Gemara says, so it could very well be, again, Dam Yichud would prevent them from living together. That's okay. Because the Maisa, their intention was not to live together, or in a conjugal sense. Their intention was that I have a wife, and by definition, that should come the Yitzhar. So I will say, again, what's interesting, should I do the Mishnah, or should I go a little bit lighter? All right, let me just show you quickly, very, very quickly. Can I need to make sure I just take care of these? Thank you. Well, so I'll just show you something very interesting here. So there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot to talk about with this. Just a couple of interesting things. First of all, look at the Rambam. So the Rambam in Hilchos Yisurei Biyah, this is Perek Yud Aleph Pasuk Halacha Tes, says the following. Says, Yeser Alzeh, the Rambam here talks about Dam Chimut. Because Rabbi Sai Tosis, I should just give you the background to this. Tosis raises Akasha. And Tosis says, thank you. Tosis says, Perush Rashi lo hayu ba'in aleid ela misyachad inimayim. V'su lo hikshari. Im kein keban da osu lo ba'aleya. My pasal ikamiyo yishlomar. Keban da shere lachar. Zayin pasal karina. Va'ot hikshu. Hechi shari di yechudi ve'adayu. Vara parakama diksuvis, misha pirsa ishtonida, velo bal hu yoshemena, shabi ishti yoshemena. Also, Tosas asks an amazing kasha. Tosas, so also, let's follow this. Here's what happens. So Rav and Rav Nachman roll into town. They both ask for their wives, right? Women line up for this opportunity. They become wives. What's the problem? The Gemara says, so dam chimut. Dam chimut. So possibility one could be that dam chimut was taken care of. How? Because they sent agents beforehand to arrange this. Okay. But let's assume we don't go with that possibility for just a moment. And Rav and Rav Nachman themselves offered the proposal. What happens? The woman accepts. She becomes a nida. Rabbi will say, what is the halacha? What is the halacha? Let's say a chupas nida. Let's say a woman is a nida at the time when she's marrying her husband. So the halacha is, they are not permitted to have yichud with each other. Right? The wedding night, they cannot be alone with each other. Again, how we structure it, we're not going to get into right now. But there is an isser yichud when the wife is a nida and the couple has never been together. Because Rabbi will say, if the couple has been together, the wife is a nida, so because they've been together and they know they'll be together again, the assumption is they won't transgress. If they've never been together, there's a concern that they may transgress. Therefore, there's an isser yichud. So ask Tosas, I don't understand. That very nice, they're coming into town, they're not going to live with their wives, but there's an isser yichud. That means Rav and Rav Nachman, when they found these women, issued the proposal. Proposal accepted. We assume she becomes a nida because of dam chimud. Now, forget about conjugal relations. There's an issue of what? Mm-hmm. Of yichud. Look at the Rambam. The Rambam writes again. Hilchos yisrui biya perikud al ha'alachates. Yeser alzeh kolbas shetav uha lihinase. Anytime they proposition the woman to get married, v'ratza, and she accepted, shoeh shivas yomim nikiyim mi'achar sheratzasa. So we assume that again, that Lamaisa, when she accepts the proposal, there's dam nida, and therefore she has to wait 7 clean days before getting married. Shema mechamuda liish ra'asa dam tipa achas v'lora gishava, because maybe as a result of her desire, of her incredible love for this man, she saw a drop of blood, and she didn't even realize it. Bein shahaisa isha gidola, bein shahaisa isha kitana, tzricha leishev shiva yimei nekiyim, me'achar shiratasa v'achar kach titbal v'tival. So the halacha is dam chimud. So when she gets the proposal, accepts the proposal, we assume that she may have blood, uterine blood as a result, therefore shiva nekiyim, halacha yud. V'chol ha'dvarim ha'elu chumra yisira, shenogu ba b'nos yisro, mimeichach me'atamud ve'in lasir min al-yom. Now obviously this is a chumra. The Tov Ram says that is a chumra, but there's a chumra that's been accepted. We don't veer from it. Lefichach, kol isha sheratza, kishet avu alinase. Therefore, every woman who has received the marriage proposal and has accepted that proposal, lo tinase ache tispar v'titbol. She may not get married until she counts shiv and akim and goes to the mikvah. However, listen to this. Ve'miseis l'tamid chachamim muteres lehinase miyad. But if she's marrying a tamid chacham, they are permitted to go out and get married immediately. Why? V'tisbar me'achar shenises v'titbol. The Rebbe says she still has to keep the shiv nekiyim. But when will she keep the shiv nekiyim? After she gets married. Why? She'tamid chachamim yodea shehi asura. Because the Tamid Chacham knows that she is asura because of what we call dam chimud. V'nishar mizeh v'lo yikrav la ad she'titbol. So we'll say the Rambam says that again, the common person is not going to be trusted. The common person, again, he gets married, he's going to want to be with his wife. Therefore, again, there's an incredible concern that he will be with his wife. And therefore, she asks, no marriage could take place until after what? Until after she goes to the mikvah. But the Rambam says an allowance was made for the Tamid Chacham, because the assumption also, you have to understand something also. The way that Chazal understand the concept of Tamid Chacham is often not the way we understand it. If you ask people what a Tamid Chacham is, he knows a lot of Torah. That's not what a Talmud Chacham is in the eyes of Chazal. That's part of what makes a Talmud Chacham. But just as important as the Torah knowledge he has is the moral character he has and the incredible scrupulousness that he has with mitzvos, that he has. So again, you're talking about the whole package. So the Rambam says the Talmud Chacham is permitted to marry the woman after he issued the proposal. What about Dam Chimud? She's going to have to go ahead and wait to go to the mikvah until after the marriage. But we are not concerned that he's going to engage in any type of relations with her. And she'll go to the mikvah after the marriage. So we'll say now this all comes together. So now what you have over here, we'll do the Ben Yoyada. Maybe we'll save it for Thanksgiving when we have a little bit more time. Actually, we still have 5 minutes. All right, let's see. But let's first bring this together. So what we have over here is the following. What we have over here is, apparently, according to this understanding of the Gemara, Rav and Rav Nachman, what's their motivation? Their motivation in this is themselves. Their motivation is their concern. I will say it's also an incredible thing. People get into so much trouble in life because they think that they are impervious to the, they think they're impervious to the Yetzirah. That they think that, again, oh, it's not me. Not me. Can't control yourselves. What's the big deal? I could go away. Don't think too highly of yourself. Mm-hmm. Nobody is above the Yetzirah. And good people fall prey all the time because they give themselves too much credit. And they think that indeed, that in reality, they're stronger than they are. The smart person is the one who proactively heads off the Yetzirah at the pass. That's what Rava and Rav Nachman are doing over here. They're heading the Yetzirah off at the pass, not because they're going to act on it, but simply because they recognize that having a wife, the pas masal, the bread in the basket, in and of itself, heads off the Yetzirah at the pass. And again, how are they structuring this relationship? Either they're going ahead and they're sending messengers ahead of time, and therefore, again, the Dan Chimut issue is resolved even before they ever come to town. Or the Maisa, what's happening? There is Dan Chimut. But what? But they're permitted to marry the woman even when she's in this state of nidus, recognizing full well that a conjugal relationship will be impossible at that point in time, but she can go to the mikveh afterwards. And here the Rambam says, herein lies the chilek between a Talmid Chacham and a regular person. A regular person can't marry after the proposal, has to wait the 7 days until she goes to the mikveh marriage afterwards. Talmid Chacham can marry immediately, even though Lemaisa, he won't be able to be with her until after she goes to the mikvah. And I will say, turn the page for just a moment. One last piece, and this is going to blow you away. So the Ben Yehoyada, we're not going to get to do this whole piece, but you'll do it a little bit on your own. The Ben Yehoyada says the following. He says, if you look, it's the right-hand paragraph by the underline. Dafyud Chesam and Beis. Hine chalila laharer acha gidoli chach me Yisrael. So the Ben Yehoyada says, I know what you're thinking about. You're thinking about, why can't the rabbis control themselves? Right? So he says, chalila, to have negative thoughts about the great chachamim of our people. So they need a woman so badly that they can't hold out for a few days. We'll say even regular people, okay? People might have a desire, people might enjoy a physical relationship, but regular people have the ability also to abstain for a couple of days. The choshekim kidoshim v'krushim ke'elu, asher makdishin atzav ma'osunam, and all the more so these kidoshim, these individuals who are holy, who themselves were individuals who were known to give up certain pleasures that they were entitled to. Gam od im hayu luhutin kol kach halila, amaylu choshel lichvod atzav be'ini abrios, v'lo od el shayim achrizin. Miyasach rozak zaswala. Furthermore, says the Ben Yehoyada, what about like the damage control to their reputation, right? They roll into town and the first thing is, all right, ladies, right? Wait, what's the pshat? They roll into town, the first thing they're asking for marriage, even if they themselves needed this. So ultimately, what about doing it a little bit quieter, but they announce it in the middle of town? Says the Ben Yehoyada something amazing. Va'od, l'may nafkamina nechtav davar zeh b'talmud, im lignos m'chas v'shalom, l'may din hayu kvar shmosam. So what's it says the Ben Yehoyada, and furthermore, why is this even here? Why do we even need this whole thing? Listen to this. Let me explain this to you. The Ben Yehoyada says one of the big problems in the times of the Gemara was that a singles crisis then also. But it was that men would often choose not to marry until they were in their 30s or their 40s. Va'ad ato yimatze ki b'makomos Kurdistan, va'omim shegam ba'ari Europa yishminak zeh. And the Ben Yehoyada says, this happens today in Kurdistan. The Ben Yehoyada was the chief rabbi of Baghdad in the 1800s. So this happens today in Kurdistan, other cities in Europe. V'hinei v'zman rav v'rav Nachman, haya minag hazeh noig ba'arim elu. So apparently in the days of Rav Nachman, in the cities Rabosai of Darshish and Shchinsiv, this was a major problem. The men were not getting married till later on in life. Remember, I'll say the norm in the times of the Gemara was to get married at 20. So the rabbis would constantly come and rebuke them. You have to get married. Achlios kiparshta hamaschefes shal minagzeh. The rabbi meimah aretz hari nishchalim bazeh. Havu rabbanim osim achraza zu ba'avur atzman. So listen to this. But you know, this is something amazing. He says that in Darshif and Shchinsiv, there was a major crisis. What was the crisis? The men weren't getting married until later on in life. Now, you'll say to yourself, so what's the crisis there? The crisis is that men are men. And if a man is not getting married till 30 or 40, chances are he's not remaining in the base medrash putting in extra hours for his learning, right? He's taking care of his needs in other ways. And therefore, the rabbis would constantly come to these cities and would rebuke the men. Finally, what happens? Nothing was getting through. What did Rava and Rav Nachman do? Rav Nachman did something very public. What did they do? They married. They married. They took wives because they were making a public statement that even though we're married and we're abundant and we have families, and the truth is our desires are not as strong as yours because they were older also. Lemayis, again, we are impressing upon you the importance of marriage. And therefore, by taking, because again, Abosa, you could say whatever you want. You could talk to your blue in the face. But by taking this dramatic action, their goal was to impress upon the residents of Darshish and Shchinsiv ultimately the need to marry. So here again, well, maybe over the next couple of days we'll go into this a little bit more. But Lemaisa again, and we see, by the way, other the Ben Yehuda brings other examples of this, of Rabbanim who had to come in to correct certain flaws within a city and were only able to do so through dramatic examples. So here they're leading by example. They're marrying, again, not even engaging conjugally with these women, but nevertheless making a point that if for us who are older than you, if for us who are already married, have families, but yet to be even a few days without a wife is not right, all the more so all of you who are not yet married need to take appropriate action.